The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson. Hopefully, you've gotten a chance to dive into some of our rule changes that we laid out for you on Monday's show. Gotten a lot of good response. They all seem to fall into some categories. So if we mobilize, I think we've got a broad Cover 3 coalition, and I think we can cause real change with our policy in terms of things, especially when it comes to the targeting call, especially when it comes to the instant replay review, ineligible receiver downfield. We've really come together. We've built some bridges across the college football community. We will work on that. Tom, I believe we read most of your suggestions on the air, but
no, I didn't. Uh-oh. My suggestions.
What else did we miss? Typical
to take one show off and they act like I don't even exist. You guys went over all the targeting stuff, which is one of my things, but also with the illegal man downfield stuff being called. That was one of his. Bud mentioned my idea for field goals of 50 yards or more being worth 4 points. I like that idea simply because of the kind of strategy it might add to late game situations, and it gives coaches another chance to look really dumb, which I think everybody always enjoys when watching games on Saturdays. But another one of mine was the fumble into the end zone rule. Instead of giving the ball to the defense, just make it kind of like another touchback where unless the defense recovers the ball, the offense keeps it. They just get pushed back to the 25-yard line. And then another was one I've always railed on about pass interference. Just get rid of pass interference. Call a legal contact or holding. Those are clearly defined rules. Pass interference is too nebulous at times, like guys bumping into each other while running at full speed down the field. That's crap. Get rid of it. Stop putting so much on the rest plate. Make it easy for them to figure out. And then another one I liked was kind of like a reward for the defense that I thought could be interesting for games. You're not allowed on offense to go for it on fourth down unless you've already picked up a first down on the drive, or you're inside your opponent's 40-yard line, or maybe if it's like the last 5 minutes of a game just for the, to help comebacks happen. And because I think that you reward your defense a little bit if they're able to get a three and out. And then there's also another one I didn't mention in the thread, but another one I thought about, which is kind of like a dumb fantasy football score that I think could be fun. If you get a fourth down stop, like on a fourth and goal, The defense that gets the stop gets 2 points.
2 points?
Yeah.
What's any logic behind the two?
Well, it's kind of like a safety that way. I just feel like it shouldn't be too much because the offense that did not score has already lost quite a bit by not scoring.
Right.
But I just think that kind of adds like an entirely new element to the decision-making process too. Like, okay, it's fourth and goal. I'm going for it because I need the touchdown, but there's that added risk element. Like if I don't get it, this is like an 8-point swing all of a sudden.
Because there's no risk when you say they're going to have to march 98 yards. Well, not no risk, obviously. I mean, you're trying to score a touchdown. You've got points that are lost with that opportunity, but you're adding in the idea that you could end up giving up points as well.
Yeah, I just think it adds new elements that I think create more interesting situations, and it kind of, you know, just puts a little more at risk for everybody involved.
So, Tom, I guess I have one question for you on this. If you eliminate pass interference and you go with just illegal contact, defensive holding, are you making those more punitive? Like, is there any way you can get a 15-yard foul? Because if I know that, like, the idea of defensive holding or illegal contact is taken out of the game as a defensive coordinator – I'm going to tell my guys to hold the hell out of you because it's only a 5 yarder and a first down as opposed to a 15 yarder, right? Like that,
yeah.
To me, you see what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to legal contact the hell out of you.
Yeah, I think you could switch it to like that's still a 15 yard penalty and an automatic first down. But I just want to get rid of the pass interference that, like I said, it's two guys 20 yards downfield running at full speed and the pass is underthrown. So they bump hips, slowing down to get to the ball, and then it's a penalty on the defense. God, I hate that. That is crap. Now, if you want, like, yeah, if you want to make the holding and the illegal contact more punitive, add 10, 15 yards to it, that makes plenty of sense to me, too. It's just get rid of the judgment calls. Make it clear.
All right, my only other follow-up to yours, and I actually like most of yours. How often is this – like this team is going to go for fourth down despite the fact they didn't get a first down on their drive and it's not the last couple of minutes of the game situation or last couple of minutes of the half. Like how often is that occurring? Like, is there a specific example of this happening that bugged you or thought you was like made you think it was inequitable? Like, am I missing something here? Is this happening a lot?
No, it does. It's not that it happens a lot. I just think it's a reward for the defense that if, you know, when you come on the field, if you get a three and out, they have to punt.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's every single rule, if you look at the rule changes for the last billion years at this point, every single one has been to help the offense. I want to throw the defense a bone. I want to give them a little reward. I also think that, you know, talked about before the show, I've got like I got to do a mock draft for CBS Sports. Or we're doing a dynasty at fantasy football mock draft. I also think for fantasy football leagues, we should add a scoring to where, you know, like you have team defenses and special teams and you get points for sacks and all that stuff. We should add it where you get points for three and outs too.
See, so as long as you've got the crunch time,
people are listening.
Now, as long as you're keeping the crunch time alive, then I'm cool with it because I love the drives where the quarterback has like 3 fourth down conversions marching down the field. I mean, that is, as a fan of the defense, you are pulling your hair out and screaming. You cannot believe that you've just gotten beat on a bunch of fourth downs. And if you're on offense, I mean, that's just a roller coaster right there to be able to go through that. As long as you've got the crunch time scenario, then I think that the fan experience is still strong with that. You don't want to eliminate that.
Yeah.
I got you. All right, business for today. We are in one of a couple different windows within the off-season transfer portal, the off-season transfer movement. This is going to be one. It's sort of come to a close. We're going to have another little window that opens up. It's not shout out to all of our soccer and football listeners out there. This is not a actual transfer window, though it has sort of become like that since we get a little bit of movement at the end of the season before spring practice. We will likely get more movement after spring practice, particularly as we go into the summer parts of the offseason as some players make some movement in order to try to get in for the fall semester, maybe even get on campus for some summer classes as well. So we are a couple years into the transfer portal era, and I went back and I remember that our very first episode talking about this when it first started, it was like, welcome to the portal. And we couldn't get over the fact that it was called the portal. It just seemed like very science fiction to us. And I think it speaks to how quickly it's become normalized that I don't even think it's weird anymore. It's just kind of part of my lexicon. And the fact that, you know, within college football programs and coaching staffs, there are coaches who are in charge of keeping their eyes on the portal. Every insider at 24/7 Sports has a staffer who they've got the login for so that we've got all the information on the transfer portal. It seems allegedly. I'll let Bud address that. But to get things started, like, are there any surprises from when the transfer portal really became a part of our lives in college football and sort of where we are now? Has any of it surprised you at all?
No, I mean, I think that it's kind of what we thought it was going to be. I think it's designed to make it easier for players who want to transfer to give them an avenue to do that. And I think that one of the side effects of that, which was easy to foresee, was that while it's easier for plenty of kids to transfer, it's also going to lead likely to more kids making the decision to transfer if it's easier to do. And I do worry about that in the long term, because it's like, if you look in the portal right now, and again, we don't have direct access to it, but you know, 24/7 Sports has its portal up with pretty good information on who's in there. There are a lot more kids in the transfer portal than there are eligible scholarships right now. And I feel like we're seeing situations where for some guys, like, it makes plenty of sense to leave because, you know, you're not going to get a chance to play. But I think that we need to figure something out, and I don't really know how we could do it, but I think the portal's designed and intended to do this. I just don't know that it's doing a very good job of it, where the kids need to know what's available to them before they make this decision. Now, they could pull themselves back, but at also a lot of places, once you're in, they could pull your scholarship and they can move on and be done with you. And plenty of schools or coaches probably going to want to do that, especially if it's somebody who's, you know, third or fourth on the depth chart at their position. It doesn't look like they've got a legitimate passage to starting anytime soon. So I worry about the kids that get lost in the churn, because we know all about, like, the high profile guys who are moving on to starting roles at other Power Five schools or other G5 schools. But it's all like those low three stars that are just kind of getting lost and maybe having to go to the FCS level or just not finding places at all. I worry about that kind of impact in the long term.
So I'm very pro player. I mean, as I think, you know, you guys are as well. But if we're going to give these guys the freedom to transfer, we have to give them the freedom to make mistakes. And some of these dudes drastically overestimate how good they are. And they're willing to take that risk to get to the NFL. A lot of these guys don't see college as a thing they value, right? They see the chance to play college football as a way to get to the NFL. And they don't necessarily care about the schooling element that much. And they think, hey, if I'm not getting playing time here, maybe, like, I got to go somewhere where I can play, because I have such a short window to be able to impress, you know, the NFL scouts to be able to get to the league. I hear what Tom's saying, and our Chris Hummer has done really good work on this, writing about what he calls portal purgatory, where you're just out there, they've pulled your scholarship because that's the deal. Like, if you jump in the transfer portal, the school can yank it, like Tom said. I mean, you get to finish out the semester you're in, which is why a lot of guys jump, you know, the day their classes start, so they actually get that final semester of safety. But that's just kind of a downside. Like, if you want more freedom of movement, we can't force the other schools to take you. But I think it is a concern.
Has it altered I believe that there's probably still tampering in the same way that there's probably impermissible benefits, but what? Has it changed the tampering game at all? Just because it brings above board the idea for contact. The idea that, you know, I can return to my team, but I also can be contacted by this coach. I'm very much putting out a flyer that says interested and open, like the old Facebook status from like 2006. You know, like you could definitely like signal what you're interested in. And I think that, you know, not that tampering was ever the scourge of college football or anything like that, but I got to think that it's changed at least some of that aspect of the transfer as it was before the portal.
I still think a lot of these guys know where they're going, and generally it's kind of like a double check. It's like, all right, I know I'm going to go here. I know this school wants me. The tampering goes on all the time. It's really hard to prove. You have your director of high school relations or coach that knows your private quarterback coach, and you know, you contact him. It's like, oh, where will this five-star go? And everybody's like, oh, he'd be a great fit here, he'd be a great fit there. And the recruiting industry is like, no, he's going to Ohio State. Like, we already know that, like, their coaching staff is tight with this private quarterback coach, and like, this has been prearranged, and that type of thing. But I definitely think it, for the guys who genuinely don't know where they want to go, it gives them the opportunity to survey their landscape a little bit if their school can take them back. But otherwise, you're out there with no rope.
My favorites are like the players that announce they're transferring and like 36 hours later, they're announcing where they're going. It's like, all right, come on, just
yeah.
If I'm the coach at that school, I'm like, all right, cool. Just wait like a couple more days. Just don't make it so blatantly obvious.
Or the ones who announce where they're going before they put their paperwork in, which means technically like they're not even allowed to be contacted, because some of these kids don't really get it. And like some of their trainers and advisors, who should not be advisors in any way, don't really get it either. And they're like, just tweet out that you're in the transfer portal. And it's like, that's not how it works. This is an actual thing you need to submit some paperwork for, right? You know, like, you can't just declare for the draft without actually declaring for the draft. Kind of the same concept.
Bankruptcy. Like,
yes. Damn it, I missed it. Yes.
All right. Well, if you're the coach, all right, because the if you're pro player, one thing that I've sort of followed and still believe at least a little bit is that coaches are being asked, you know, they're being paid a lot's being asked of them, and coaches are now, in addition to recruiting high school players, there's more pressure on them to recruit their active roster. You know, you don't need like to make sure everyone's buying in, to have a relationship with them. You're also being put in a position where you're recruiting the transfer portal at the same time. If you are a head coach, do you like this new era?
Yes and no. I think that it is a headache in that it gives me something else that I have to worry about. But I think, like we've seen, programs with the resources to do so are kind of adapting to it, where they're hiring people who pretty much, you know, they're analysts, assistants, they're on the coaching staff, but their primary role is to, you know, keep track of the transfer portal, as well as, you know, it's like a whole, it's basically high school recruiting. It's like its own separate department at this point. But I think that as far as the head coach, it kind of depends on your situation. I think that if you're established, maybe, and you've got kind of a system going, it's not as big of a deal. I think maybe if you're a new coach coming into a new school and you want to win right away, I think the transfer portal is a bonus to you, because it gives you access to players who, you know, you don't have to completely overhaul and rebuild your program that you're taking over and then wait on a bunch of freshmen and sophomores to become juniors and seniors to where you can win. And by that time you're in year three and the patience is already wearing thin with you in the fan base and with the boosters. So it gives you a chance to come out and be strong right away. But as far as once you're going, yeah, I think that if I'm a coach, it's like, man, I got to spend all this time worrying about who I'm bringing in as the next play, you know, my next team, my next class, my next players. You're already here. I should only have to worry about developing you and making sure you're ready for Saturday. I shouldn't have to worry about making sure that you're super happy and you're not going to be leaving me anytime soon. But again, coaches' salaries keep rising, and the higher they get, the more responsibility that's going to come along with it.
I would agree with Tom there. I think there is one implication. If you are a particularly hard-ass coach, right, and a guy who's like very old school, and we're all thinking of some right now, I think if you're already established like that, you can continue to do that for a while, because like you're going to recruit a certain type of player for whom that works. And I don't know that you're going to care about continuing to recruit your own roster, although you should certainly care about communicating to your players that the path and the plan that you had for them is still on track, especially if the kid's not getting early playing time. Hey, look, man, this is exactly what you need to work on. We see you making a big leap in this next semester or two, and you're going to be getting on the field for us, you know, soon-ish, just not right this second. But I do think if you're an AD and you're out there right now, I don't know how well hiring a new head coach who's a real, like, not player-friendly head coach is going to work in this era. You need to make sure that people are actually enjoying their college experience, because now they have options. When they didn't have options before, and it was really punitive to transfer because you would lose a year of eligibility, which is kind of insane to put non-competes on non-employees, personally, I think. But like, you didn't have to worry about that as much. Now I think that approach won't work. I also think, to Tom's point, let's understand what is and is not available in the transfer portal. Transfer portal, so far, the evidence shows us that it is absolutely really great for plugging holes on your roster, but not with superstar talent. Right, we've not had a transfer player other than quarterback, which I'll get to in a second, go in the first round in the last 3 years. We might have one this year in Jalen Phillips, but you know, I think there were some non-football reasons why he transferred from UCLA to Miami, and he was the number one overall player in the recruiting rankings. So the guy clearly had some pretty freakish talent back in 2017. Quarterback, though, you can seemingly get a difference maker, because oftentimes coaches pick the wrong QB, or they put too much into they're biased as to keeping it the same, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like they're having to overcome that bias, so they pick the wrong guy sometimes. But you can definitely fill it holes. I just don't think you're going to win a national championship building your roster around transfers. You might win one building it around a transfer if that guy is at the quarterback position.
I don't want to be the coach who's doing the transfer portal gamble every year. I don't want to have part of my roster offseason plan to be like, yeah, we're going to lose three or four guys, but we're going to get three or four guys too. Like that seems to me like you are going to never have the opportunity to truly level up to where you've got competitive depth and development within the program that's going to allow you to compete for championships. Like that's, and I think there's some coaches that, especially Tom, to your point, like when you first get hired and you've just got to, there's going to be some players that are leaving because there was a coaching change. You need to get some people in right away. But I think that making the transfer portal as just sort of part of your roster management plan is a very dicey proposition when it comes to continuity and when it comes to trying to build like year over year program building.
Yeah. And I mean, I had a pretty good seat to, you know, at Illinois. Lovie Smith over the final years of his tenure there was kind of trying to use the transfer portal as more heavily than, you know, actually recruiting high schoolers. Like they were using it kind of as a crutch a little too much to try to fill too many holes in the roster, thinking that, you know, we could fix the team, we can improve the team this way. And they did get some key transfers that really did help. It's just, there's a ceiling to what that can do. And we saw what, you know, the end result of it was for Lovie Smith and that Illinois staff.
Indeed. Why do you think, is it a simple numbers thing? Only one guy can be on the field. Only one guy can have the ball in his hands. Like why the quarterback position is not only where we end up talking about it a lot, but also where you do find the examples of success. I mean, just last season is Derek King the banner for that? We've seen obviously transfer quarterbacks win daggum Heisman trophies, but I'm talking about, you know, just in the past 2020 season, like Derek King, probably the best transfer quarterback of last year.
Yeah. Either him or Bruchel, right? I think it was King.
Yeah.
I think with the quarterback position, look, leadership matters, but I do think coaches can sort of overweight what they know and what they trust as opposed to other positions. I think largely the more talented guy wins out more often. And so I think that like you may have greater certainty in what you're getting at other spots, but like think about some of these quarterbacks that have won Heisman trophies or, you know, taken their teams to the playoff. They lost out on the starting job. Joe Burrow got beaten out by Dwayne Haskins, right? Jake Fromm did not lose his job to Justin Fields. Jalen Hurts lost his job to Tua. Now that one was a smart one, but like the other ones, I think you can argue maybe, maybe not. And like maybe it wasn't clear, or maybe they wanted to go with the guy for whatever reason. I think you can find some real finds at QB. Of course, there's plenty of misses there too.
And one thing, it's I think one of the funny things I've always found with like the transfer portal, kind of going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, is with the way fan bases react to transfers, in that as soon as a player enters the transfer portal, it's because, you know, 24/7 sports has the, you know, they re-rate a lot of the transfers. Like if you go look at their transfer portal section, you'll see this guy was a 4-star coming out of high school, but now he's like a mid 3-star as far as the transfer portal is concerned. But in the eyes of fans, like a transfer is always a 5-star.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did you see that? Like we're getting this 3-star safety for like a high 3-star safety from Alabama. This guy is going to be great. He's awesome. And it's like, you have to remember, like, yeah, Alabama may be a bad example because there are plenty of really good players who might get passed up on the depth chart by, you know, first round draft picks and say, well, I'm a 5th rounder. I'm going to go somewhere else so I can actually play. But the point is, it's like you see this reaction from fan base is like, oh, this kid's transferring, he's automatically good because I've seen him before. I've never seen this high schooler, but I know this guy got a scholarship and he was on a good team, so he must be good. It's like you need to temper expectations. And there are, and I think part of it is like you see the Derek Kings, you see the Shane Buchels, you see the Joe Burrows, you see like the Kyler Murrays, these guys that work out really well. And it's like that guy is the exception. There are, for every one of those guys, there's roughly 775 dudes who are perfectly adequate players on FBS rosters, you know, on the two deep, maybe. Some of them are putting it, you know, starting games regularly. Some of them are just depth and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's always interesting to me to see how people react to transfers.
Because most of your guys who are going to be really, really superstar players are good enough to start where they are. And if you're starting, you're happy. That's
or you've gone to the NFL. You're not looking to transfer.
Yeah, or you got 1 year left, and it's like, all right, there's really no point in me transferring. I have 1 year left. I might as well just stick it out here where I know I fit their system. I'm doing well, obviously, because I'm going to the NFL. Yeah, that's – I think we nailed it there.
I think that you need to find – if you're going to put it back in the headspace of the fan, you better be dealing with like a personal – not a personal issue. Like, I would never like wish for a personal issue, but I know some of the players that are in this particular transfer class, it's, I wanted to be closer to home, or, you know, something like didn't work out from an off field. Like there's nothing wrong with the talent level of some players. It's just, there was something else at play. And that's the only thing that you can hang your hat on when it comes to like really leveling up.
Right. So like I did our transfer ratings last year for 24/7 Sports along with Barton, who helped me look it over when I was done with it. And like I talked to all the coaches about like where these guys were leaving, or at least to the dudes who covered the team who talked to the coaches. And I also tried to talk to as many as I could where the kids were going to kind of get the full picture. Right. And there was one kid who I was like, all right, what, this kid's pretty good. Like, why is he leaving? Like, was he going to get passed up? And coach told me, no, he just ran out of drug test. He can fail here. Like the kid just loves weed. And like, if you transfer, your weed test reset. Like the, you know, so like you're
whatever
back
your
at zero.
Strikes are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you're going to go back right to a clean slate.
Exactly. Like, no, we're pissed to lose him, but like we know he was going to get suspended here. So, you know.
So just coaches, go find the guys that are about to run out of weed strikes, and you can go get yourself an open box special.
That's the new recruiting inefficiency. Barton, if you're listening, we found an edge.
Does Nashville have is Nashville we are they cool with it?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I'm guessing Tennessee. I don't know.
Considering Tennessee just, you know, the Senate there just passed a bill that would get kids kicked off the team for protesting, I'm going to say they're probably not legalized weed.
Yeah. Yeah, I would guess not.
They threw me a curveball with sports betting, but I don't think they're there with marijuana legalization yet. Coming up on the other side, looking at some of those big names and also the teams that have been able to be big winners so far in the transfer portal. Next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
So we mentioned the personal side. There's, you know, sort of different steps along the way. But to me, like when we're talking about the teams that have significantly upgraded their personnel through transfers, is there anybody that y'all would put above Florida right now? And I know that I'm doing that just with two offensive weapons, but when we think about the number of skill position players that are leaving from that Dan Mullen offense, including quarterback Kyle Trask, but to be able to get Eric Gilbert from LSU, 5-star top 10 player in his class, to be able to get DeMarcus Bowman, somebody who, when he first showed up on campus, Dabo Swinney was talking about him and throwing out CJ Spiller comparisons. Like, that to me is a great starting point where we can say, if you're looking for a non-quarterback who can have significant impact on a team, Gilbert and Bowman and what they do for that Florida offense feels like one of the big storylines of transfers so far here in early 2021.
Here, I have a question for you, Bud, because I would agree, Chip. I think that's pretty much going to be the top as far as landing transfers this year, because like you mentioned that you did the rankings for transfer recruits last year. Both Bowman and Gilbert, who were 5-stars out of high school, are still 5-stars in the transfer portal. Have there ever been two other 5-star transfers available?
Not at the non-quarterback position. We certainly had some 5-star, you know, QBs before, like Justin Fields, I'm pretty sure was still a 5-star when he transferred. And you know, Tom, a lot of times Like, we only had 18 four-star or better players in this transfer portal. So I think that really reflects what we see through the draft, which is where you can get good depth. You can get good contributors. You can get a lot of certainty, right? These guys know how to work out. They know how to show up. They know how to lift. They know how to eat. They know how to go to practice. They know how to go to class. Like, there's some certainty, especially in this pandemic time, that college coaches value. And they're willing to sacrifice a little bit of upside to get a whole lot of floor, especially, you know, like that quote that one of the coaches gave me was, why am I maybe going to make a four-year mistake when I could take a kid who I already know can play via the portal?
We talked about that on signing day. It was one of the reasons why there's a lot of scholarships available at some of these schools.
So for Gilbert, I don't think there's any argument to drop him. I mean, he was our highest rated tight end recruit ever in 24/7 Sports. He was immediately one of the better pass catchers in the SEC, despite the fact that the rest of LSU's offense was kind of iffy at times, you know, and we know he'll be used well at Florida because of what they just did with Kyle Pitts. I think with Bowman, it's a little bit different. I can certainly see an argument for making him a four, like a high four, or leaving him five. Ultimately, left him as a five. I don't think he anticipated Travis Etienne coming back. And he also had some family stuff that happened, I believe, a death in the family. So he wanted to go back closer to home to Lakeland. And he hasn't been injured. I don't think there's really anything that would make you believe that his abilities have diminished. And he might start there. Like, there's not a whole lot of difference makers at the running back position for UF. So I would say they're a clear one for me as well. And they also got some nice help on the interior defensive line with Shelton and Daquan Newkirk.
Shelton following that Justin Shorter map. It's like Justin Shorter's getting out of there, and he's still there in Gainesville. Yeah. Like, he should be taken with the exodus of skill position talent. Like, Trevon Grimes is going to be out. Like, he should start to see a little bit more, and he flashed a little bit near the end of the season.
Florida fans were not happy with the rating that I put on Justin Shorter and also the running back they got last year from Miami. But those two guys didn't really do much for them this year.
No.
And part of it was because they were blocked out of the position some, but also in some of the issues that Shorter had at Penn State were issues that we were a little bit worried about as a recruit, right? Like catching the ball and getting open. I mean, he's big and fast, but can you actually consistently catch the ball? They mostly threw him kind of bubble screen stuff at Florida this year and let him work with the ball in his hands, which Dan Mullen does a tremendous job of getting guys in space. And I think that was a valuable use, but I'll be interested to see if he can take that next step. But ultimately, I mean, Florida has done a good Lorenzo Lingard. Thanks, Coca. The running back for Miami. That was a situation where Florida was really excited to get Lingard, but Miami was telling me, he was playing fullback at practice some, right? Mm. Like, he's not the same dude after his injury. We'll see how he bounces back. I always liked Lorenzo a lot, covering him as a recruit, you know, here in the state. But Florida's had a nice, history of success with transfers under Dan Mullen. You know, Jonathan Grenard, Brenton Cox,
Van Jefferson,
Trevon Grimes, Stuart Reese was a solid contributor for them this year, and I believe is back as a super senior. So, I mean, definitely they were the number one. There's really only one other team I think you can say would have given them a run for the money.
Who?
Tennessee.
Tennessee, so, for taking players in?
Or excuse me. Sorry, not Tennessee. My bad. Oklahoma.
That would be the other way. Yeah.
Oklahoma taking advantage of Tennessee.
Yes, correct. Yeah, my bad. Excuse me, guys. Yeah, Oklahoma was the only team to sign three or more four-star transfers this year. So they were my number two team when I did the write-up for the teams that did the best job in the portal.
What does that look like for Oklahoma's Hall? Who do you like from it?
So Eric Gray, who was a really good running back for the Vols. I was super impressed with Gray because all season I wrote about how Tennessee's offensive approach was just ridiculous. I mean, they would just run the ball on first down every time, and defenses knew it, and yet Gray still managed to be kind of productive, which was crazy considering how much teams were loading up against the run because they knew that, you know, Pruitt was coaching as a head coach as a DC. So him in Oklahoma's offense, I've seen him catch the ball well in 7-on-7 before. I think he has some potential you can unlock there. We know he's a tough runner. I think he'll be good there. Wanya Morris was a freshman All-American in 2019. I know that doesn't mean a ton because a lot of that's just how much that you play and are you kind of famous. But he was a solid player in 19, wasn't quite as good this year. I think he dealt with some issues of not being around as much in the offseason due to COVID. But athletically, we don't see a whole lot of guys who are that big and can move that much, and he has some experience. So I think OU does a great job coaching offensive linemen with Bill Biedenbaugh there. that makes sense to keep him as a four. And then safety, Key Lawrence, he dropped a little bit, but he's still a four-star. He was a freshman at Tennessee this year. He follows his buddies out there to Oklahoma. And then they added a couple other three stars as well. So their haul is very, very nice.
Damn, Lincoln Riley's a savage. Just out here. Open, hey, we'll send. Hey, listen, I talked to my friends in Memphis. We'll send a party bus to come get you. Like, we will come and we will pick you up and we will bring you to Norman to be able to capitalize on that. We mentioned, so Oklahoma lost wide receiver Charleston Rambo, who ends up going to Miami. Miami has not just one super senior, but two, with one of them being Derek King, who obviously came over, but also another, they've got another one, Jared Williams, right? The offensive lineman. Tackle. Yeah, who's, and he came in, he was a transfer as well. So Oklahoma, Miami gets Charleston Rambo. They also get Tyreek Stevenson from Georgia. The Manny Diaz has a Hurricanes team that is very much, you know, we just looked at, you know, Quincy Roche. We just looked at Jalen Phillips, both of them gone. Miami's starting to become one of those kind of schools, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Manny Diaz was an early adopter of the transfer portal. He's been all about it. I think he's done a really nice job with it. As you mentioned, getting Charleston Rambo. You know, look, Rambo was a pretty good player for them in 2019. In 2020, COVID, injury, that type of thing. 2020 was a hard year to evaluate. We talked about this on the show a couple times, but it's like, all right, was this guy, did he all of a sudden lose his ability or did he just get hurt? What were the situations here? I think he'll be good in that offense. Miami definitely needs better receiver play, as we've spoken about a couple times. Tyreek Stevenson, who was a kind of a jack of all trades for Georgia, I think he'll look forward to getting to play more just regular corner for Miami, one of the most athletic players in the country. And then they get a pass rusher out of Tennessee. And this is going to be a common theme here. Tennessee lost some dudes who we gave an 82 grade to. I think that's probably fair, but he could be a guy who maybe could exceed that for them at the end of Manny Diaz's defense, I think.
The biggest is, so for this year for quarterbacks, one of the biggest headlines is going to be, speaking of Miami, is going to be at Florida State, where we've got Mackenzie Milton. And Danny was on here discussing the leadership and everything that he's going to be able to bring, and the fact that also Mike Norvell is really working to use some of these transfers right now to address some spots. I mean, is the roster right now, when Mike Norvell's going to the transfer portal, outside of the quarterback position? Because Mackenzie Milton with full health could be really special. Like, Mackenzie Milton at full health is a unique talent at quarterback in college football. With the other transfers that Florida State's bringing in, do y'all see that more as filling out depth, or is he really like addressing needs where these guys are going to be coming in and counted on in a big way to be playing significant starter snaps and be primary contributors?
I'd put the over under at new starters from transfers at like 5.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, like, they really don't think some of these guys on our team can play, and they want, like, they,
like, I think that's not good. I would think that that's not a great sign for Florida State. Yeah.
No, and they, look, they very clearly traded the certainty you were getting. I mean, like, Keir Thomas is a solid, productive SEC defensive lineman from South Carolina, right? Jamie Robinson, the same. Like, he's, you know, probably an upper half safety in the SEC. Not a great player, but somebody who they believe they can come in and count on, and they expect to start. I think they hope to get one starter at corner out of Brandon Moore and Jarquez McClellion, right? The UCF and Arkansas kid. I think Jermaine Johnson starts for them as a pass rusher on the defensive line. They went out and I think they feel like they got a lot of really solid players there. But I don't think that they're fooled into thinking they've got tremendous upside. You know, they're just trying to get back to a bowl game this year.
Dang.
You know, I don't expect any kind of huge jump on the field at this point. But with Milton, it's interesting because this staff came from Memphis.
Yeah.
And Milton tore them up multiple times. Like, they know what he can do. I think they respect him as a competitor a whole lot. Clearly, if he was 100% healthy, he wouldn't be in the transfer portal because he'd be in the league. You know, I'm not saying he would be a first-round pick given his size limitations, but like, he would not be available for a Florida State team that just went, you know, 5-7, 6-6, 3-5 if he didn't come with some questions. He just happened to fall into their lap, and they, I'm sure, you know, I think he respects Mike Norvell's offense a whole lot too, having played against it in 2016 to 2018.
And seeing what it can do for quarterbacks.
Yeah, right.
That's true. What's
like Ray White? I mean,
any other teams that have really stood out in terms of their action? Jaden Lars Woodby was Florida State, right? Now he's at Boston College.
Yeah, he just was really never the same player after the injuries.
Yeah,
that was interesting. I he was pretty productive as a freshman, and then the last 2 years just didn't seem to have that same pop and same burst. So I do hope he gets healthy. He's I think he can be a good player again. I think UCLA did a nice job overall. Like they get Zach Charbonnet from
Michigan.
Like Tom,
like Charbonnet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they clearly will give back some carries. Felton last year got a ton of carries. I mean, it was a short season, but he got about a full season's worth of carries in only seven games. They took a pair of defensive backs from FCS/G5. Old Dominion's not FCS anymore. Never mind. But for Dement and Johnson, I think that one of those two guys could start for them. And they kind of made a bet on a quarterback in Ethan Garbers from Washington, who I know they liked coming out of high school. He hit the transfer portal. And we think he still has some upside. So UCLA did well, Penn State, USC. There's a lot of teams, I think, did a really nice job of filling out rosters and filling holes. But also, there's just not that much crazy upside talent in the portal right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think if you look at their overall class, this is more of a one player deal to me, although they did get Will Levis from Penn State. But I think getting Wandale Robinson from Nebraska is huge for Kentucky if they are, you know, capable of figuring out how to use him. Because, like, having watched Nebraska the last few years, it has been a bad team with a lot of problems. But Wandale Robinson was not the problem. Wandale Robinson is a very good player who I think that for a Kentucky offense that, you know, last year and the year before, kind of stagnant at times, didn't really have explosive kind of playmakers who could break things open every time they touched the ball. I think Robinson can be that guy, and he's so versatile. He, you know, you can use him in the backfield, that you can line him up at receiver. You can put him all over the place. So I think having that kind of talent in their offense could go a long way for them this year. So just based on that one player alone, I feel like Kentucky had an excellent transfer portal offseason.
Kentucky has shown us that they only need one player.
That's what I'm saying.
They'll build a whole daggum offense around one player. Mike Jones Jr. Is at LSU. Now we've got, do you know the number?
Oh, shoot.
I just know it's 8004 is the end. I can't roll it right off my tongue.
We're going to get so many 2 stars because of this.
Hey, listen, he'll be closer in Louisiana than he was in South Carolina to the home of Mike Jones himself. Maybe he can pick up that phone number and hit him on the text. The number one, like, big question mark is back from Tennessee, and it's Henry Toto, who was as soon as he popped onto the scene, it was very obvious that he was going to be a real game changer and somebody who could, you know, be like a star, like the best defensive player and those high impact linebackers. You know, he was in as a freshman, he flashed, but then as a sophomore, he was the best player on that defense. He's expected to be an NFL player, and I have no idea which way he's leaning on this one. So what, like, how do you judge your expectations? What's the crystal ball saying for Henry Toto? Because I would argue that, so quarterback's obviously in a whole nother position, but you mentioned Jalen Phillips. If we're going to use the old, like, what positions really matter, defensive line, clearly in the game of football, high value position, and a game-changing, versatile linebacker has got to be up there with a single player who can change the face of your defense. Where's he going, and is he really going to be as much of an impact as the fans of whatever school he commits to are going to be talking like they got, like, a Bednarik Award winner, or, you know, like the best defensive player in college football? Do you think that he will be able to have a major impact, and where do we think he might end up?
Well, This team has really needed some good news for a long time, and I think they're finally going to get it. It's Alabama.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So quoting from Hank South here, February 10th of BamaOnline.com, who interviewed Henry's father, Lese, quote, Pete Golding and Coach Nick Saban, they've been reaching out. While I can't speak for Henry, I know all of our discussions, he wants to stay in the SEC. And I think he's leaning towards Alabama. I mean, heavily leaning towards Alabama. Continuing here. All the other SEC schools reached out to him too. But one thing that we talked about was that we chose Tennessee the first time when we should have came to Alabama. So let's not make that mistake twice. Even more. I got more respect for Coach Saban now, Lisa said. Coach Saban is a man of his word. He's truly about the player. And the reason why I say that is he advised Henry to wait until April comes around because the NCAA one-time transfer rule hasn't passed yet. It was supposed to pass in January, the day after the national title, and it didn't. They set it back on the table until April. And Coach Saban told us to wait until April. And if this thing passes, he was like, there's one more hurdle, which is the SEC needs to pass in-conference transfers also. For him to do that, I've got a newfound level of respect for the man. He's one of those guys that truly, for his players, I told Henry, why not play for a man that's looking out for your best interests? We'll probably sit down and talk with Coach Saban again and see what he feels is best for Henry. Lisa said, Coach Saban's advice is he thinks Henry is gone after this year to the NFL. He told her, if you can come to us and play the way you're playing, your NFL grade is going to be high. I would encourage you after this year to leave, if that's the case.
It's so, a Rizap. This is done.
Like, I think this is based like, and I will say that Henry's dad was pretty heavily involved in his recruitment the first time. So I would say the, hey, like, let's not make that same mistake twice quote is noteworthy.
Silly me to not pull up his recruiting profile prior to this podcast, because I just speak so glowingly about him from having watching him play. I forgot that Alabama was right there with Tennessee when the first decision was made coming out of high school.
There's also like probably 600 more words of quotes here saying how great Nick Saban is, also how much we love Pete Golding, and that shooting down rumors that Henry's going to come back to the West Coast. So
that's it.
All time.
This feels like crap. Yeah. By the way, Coca in the chat, 281-330-8004.
Boomers. We're getting flamed by the youngs.
How old is Coca? Like over under before he tells us. Do you guys
Coca's
know?
Coca's 27.
No, he just had his 30th birthday.
Was that that was his 30th?
Mm-hmm.
Can Coca call us boomers if we're only 5 years older than him?
Coca's old as hell.
How old is Chip?
33.
Okay. Look, you can't call Chip a boomer if you're only 30 and Chip's 33.
Nah, the Gen Z told me to Hufflepuff my ass on out of here with a crying face emoji.
Chip's still trying to rock that side part in skinny jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, still got the side part in skinny jeans.
That's a mom TikTok thing, by the way, I learned from my wife.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the side part in skinny jeans are out.
Yeah.
Boyfriend jeans and middle part are in.
Let me write that down.
Boyfriend jeans and Golden Goose shoes. It's the look of everybody who's mad that you actually have to keep your mask on when you order your drink inside at brunch.
Oh man.
All right. Before we get out of here, were there any other like players or teams so far that we haven't hit on here?
There's one more I think we should probably talk about. It's Doug Nestor going to West Virginia, from Virginia Tech, one of the better offensive linemen in the country, just a continued exodus really from the Hokies, man. That I don't know. I really wonder, like, if we weren't in a pandemic, would the Hokies have made a move? Cause that's a nice get for the Mountaineers.
If we weren't in the pandemic,
would they have made a move on Fuente?
Fuente.
Cause their recruiting is terrible.
Their recruiting is terrible.
They were in what, the 60s?
Shane Beamer was out there.
Shane Beamer was out there.
Maybe that's why they didn't make a move, because their boosters would have wanted to hire Shane Beamer.
That might be some really savvy ADing by Whit Babcock right there. If just knowing
evil
what would happen.
Genius Whit Babcock.
So I do think that it is important to remember that Virginia Tech in 2019 was one win away from playing for the ACC championship. It didn't feel like that, like around the team. It didn't feel like they were an ACC championship caliber team. But the problem was that one win that they didn't get was breaking a 10-year winning streak against their rival UVA. and allowing that to happen ain't great. And that there were times, like, remember they had the delayed start. And so you missing like half your coaching staff and double digit players, almost two dozen at one point. And they started the year looking really good. I don't know. I think the bottom kind of fell out and things got a little shaky after the strong start. If they'd been flat out bad through the whole season, then maybe they had done it, but they were good there for a minute.
I could agree with that.
Offensive line was rolling. It was like until that shootout loss to North Carolina, it kind of felt like Virginia Tech was going to be one of the better teams in the ACC. Could contend, not necessarily with the Clemson or Notre Dame, but at least to potentially be in that North Carolina-Miami mix. So there was enough good stuff, I think, not to make a move on Fuente. But without a doubt, Fuente is one of these coaches who does seem to shrug his shoulders at losing lots of players to the transfer portal. He seems, as you mentioned, to be shrugging his shoulders at recruiting high schoolers and high school recruiting rankings. And Doug Nestor, a part of that great Virginia Tech offensive line, good pickup for Neil Brown and West Virginia, without a doubt. Coming up later in the week, we will be diving into the big old bag of mail. So if you want to get in on that, make sure that you leave us a 5-star rating, a review, and within that review, put your question. We will add it to the mailbag for a future episode. You can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fernelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.